Welcome to the CDH Conversation Podcast. My name is Byron Madisa, an associate at the CDH Johannesburg office. Today we will be speaking about the issue of whether laying criminal charges against an employee in the midst of a disciplinary hearing could compromise his right to a fair trial provided for in Section 35 of the Constitution, and whether the laying of criminal charges could compromise his right to remain silent in the event of an arrest or detention. This is in light of the recent judgment of the Labour Court in Ramhlakwe versus Modimolle local municipality, where the Labour Court had to decide whether an employee can successfully interdict his employer from commencing or proceeding with a disciplinary hearing on the basis that criminal charges have been laid or are pending against that employee. Put differently, whether the rights contained in Section 35 of the Constitution entitle an employee to protection by the court from a disciplinary hearing where that employee is facing criminal charges relating to his alleged criminal conduct at the workplace. This case raises two important and potentially conflicting rights. On the one hand, you have the right of the employee to testify freely in the disciplinary hearing without the fear of giving self-incriminating evidence. On the other hand, you have the right of an employer to discipline its employees. Joining me is Fiona Le Pen, a director in our employment law department. Fiona, thank you for making the time to discuss this interesting case.
Thank you, Byron.
So, on the reading of the case and the legal question, my immediate thought was, surely an employee cannot obtain such an interdict without even going into the legal reasons why such an interdict should not be granted. I thought about the lifespan of a criminal case, which can run up to 5 years, even more. And it would be impractical to expect the employer to then wait long periods before taking disciplinary action against its employees. But before we get into the legal principles and what the court found, first take us through the background of the case, the relevant facts, and the legal issues that arise.
Sure. Thank you, Byron. The facts of the case are not complicated, and to a large extent, they were common cause. The employee was employed by the municipality. He held the position of a manager in their project management unit, and he was charged with misconduct, as you've said, but it was in connection with payments that were made to service providers without following the municipality's control procedures. They had quite tight internal controls that needed to be followed, and that meant that the payment packs needed to be complete with all the relevant information, that if work was to be done, it was properly authorised by the correct functionary, and he hadn't done that in each instance. But what was important is, in one example, this chap had an invoice from a service provider for a little short of 1.5 million. And this work that had been done by that service provider was actually no more than about 340,000 rands worth of work. And it had never been verified to the extent of 1.5 million by the engineer in control of that approval process. Now, where he didn't raise this with the engineer and where he allowed a payment to go to a service provider of almost 1.1 million more than they were worth, it obviously caused alarm, and the municipality looked into this further and decided that there was merit in charging this man with fraud. And so two additional charges were added to the complaint sheet of those charges he'd have to meet in the disciplinary hearing. And that is where the employee really got quite agitated, because he said, what you're expecting me to do is answer to these disciplinary complaints in a disciplinary inquiry, but at the same time, I'm being brought to book before a criminal court potentially on charges of this nature. And he was of the view that these additional charges could not be considered and could not be ventilated in the disciplinary hearing pending the finalization of the criminal proceedings, which the municipal manager of the municipality had laid against him. And that was really the controversy in this matter, is that the employee is saying, but my constitutional right in this instance has been compromised, largely because my right to remain silent is going to be put to the test. If I remain silent, then I could just as easily be told in a disciplinary hearing, you haven't met or put up a defense to these complaints, and he would lose his job as a consequence.
Yes. So from my reading of the case, Fiona, and the legal issue that the court had to decide, the court had to determine whether an employer may be interdicted from starting or proceeding with disciplinary hearings where criminal charges have been laid or are under investigation. How did the court deal with this issue?
Sure. So the Labour Court in this matter referred back to an earlier judgment in Faree versus Amatola Water Board, where it held the following, this is quite an important quote, an employee always has a choice whether to give evidence at the disciplinary hearing, that is, whether he or she wishes to put up a defence. In other words, the employee has a choice whether to abandon his or her defence or, on the other hand, waive his or her right to remain silent. Clearly, there is some prejudice involved for such employee who faces possible future criminal proceedings based upon the same alleged misconduct that they face in the disciplinary hearing, obviously. But I would agree with the principles enunciated in the case law that it's not the type of prejudice against which the employee should expect to be protected by a court. And that's what the Faree case had to say. So the court in our matter found that his choice on which right he seeks to exercise and express and which one he's prepared to forego or compromise by giving precedence and prominence to the other is, of course, his choice and his choice alone. So in relation to Section 35(3) of the Constitution, the court held that the rights in that section are there to protect a person who is being forced to assist in their own prosecution. And if that person is convicted, it would not be based on what he said, but because the state proved beyond a reasonable doubt that he was guilty. So the court made the point that during disciplinary proceedings, the standard is on a balance of probabilities. Whilst in criminal cases, not only does the state bear the onus, but it's got to prove its case against the accused beyond all reasonable doubt. They're completely separate processes, and that's the important consideration in a matter such as this.
And another important consideration that I picked up, Fiona, is that the court looked at and it went on to say that whatever self-incriminating evidence that the employee may give in his disciplinary hearing is not automatically admissible at a later stage at the criminal trial. So he can actually object to the state in their attempt to cross-examine him on what he might have said during his disciplinary hearing.
That is correct. And the court highlighted an important point, that the employee still has the right to remain silent during criminal proceedings. So he could exercise this right and therefore not have to be concerned about being cross-examined on what he may have said in a disciplinary hearing. And the court concluded that criminal charges laid by an employer can never stand in the way of that employer subjecting the employee to a disciplinary process in the workplace. If found, the employee had not made out a case for the relief sought, and that's why the application had to fail. And I think allied to that, remember that evidence led at a disciplinary hearing is often not taken under oath. In fact, it's very rare to see that happen. So to the extent that what you've said in a disciplinary hearing can never be equated to evidence you give under oath in a criminal trial. So there's significant distinctions between those two processes. And that's why the court concluded that really this particular individual, this applicant, had come with a case that was devoid of merit. It was a baseless claim. And the court was extremely critical of his behavior and that of his attorneys in launching such an application. And that's why the court gave thought to why it shouldn't award costs against the applicant. And it found it was indeed, in terms of fairness and when looking at the judicial principles on an issue of avoiding adverse costs, due to the fact that his matter was flawed, misguided and ill-conceived, it mulcted the applicant with the costs of the respondent in having to defend the supposed application.
So, Fiona, what is our takeaway from this case?
The takeaway from this case is that disciplinary proceedings have a completely different purpose to a criminal trial and criminal prosecution. All the employer is doing in a disciplinary process is determining whether or not the employment relationship can continue if indeed the employee's committed misconduct, versus a criminal trial, which is clearly aimed at the interests of society, ensuring that offenders are brought to book. And so the one doesn't taint the other. And that really is the distinction. This particular case tried to muddle that distinction. And that's why the judge in the Labour Court had no difficulty saying, these are separate processes with separate outcomes, a separate test, different evidence would be led, the one under oath, the one not. I think the important angle for the employer is not to be tripped up with an employee says, no, you can't discipline me until my criminal prosecution has been finalised. Because as you rightly said at the outset, how long is that going to take? It might take years. What if the disciplinary process is stalled for that period of time and the person suspended on full pay at the pleasure of the employer? Absolutely not. It would make a mockery of an employer's rights to keep discipline at its workplace and for its internal controls and protocols to be respected.
And that brings us to the end of our discussion. Thank you very much for making the time, Fiona.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
The views and information expressed are those of the contributors at the time of publication and do not necessarily present those of the firm. All content is provided for general purposes only and does not constitute legal advice. We make no representations, warranties, or guarantees, whether expressed or implied, that the content on our podcast is accurate, complete, up-to-date, or reflects the current law. We accept no responsibility for any loss or damage, whether direct or consequential, arising from reliance on the information which is presented here.